Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 19 of Could It Be Podcast. So if you're joining the podcast just because you have looked up the Marina IUD or IUD, welcome. This is a podcast where I share my experience with having my breast implants removed and the breast implant illness that was associated with them before I had the surgery to have them taken out. What I'll do is provide the exact time that you can jump in if you're just wanting to listen to the part of the episode where I talk about the removal of my hormonal IUD. So just jump into the show notes. You'll be able to see exactly where you can start listening if you want to skip all of the 6 month update on my explant surgery progress. Now, in sharing this episode, I am not by any means telling everyone to remove their IUD, but you will hear when I talk about my experience with it just did not suit my body. So just a disclaimer there, not telling you to remove it, but keep an eye out for any weird symptoms that you might have. Now, before I go into the episode today, I would just like to bring attention to a study that's being completed here in Australia. So this is specifically for Australian patients only, whether they have had their explant already or are soon to have their explant. There is a professor in New South Wales here in Australia who is completing a study on what we are calling breast implant illness. His name is Professor Deva, and I will provide the link to nominate for the study in the show notes. I have done it recently myself. I came across it on the page of somebody who has recently joined Instagram to share her breast implant illness story, and we'll actually be doing an episode soon together, but very thankful for all of the information she's sharing as it brought my attention to this study. So yeah, jump in the show notes if you are interested in contributing. It is for Australian patients with Professor Deva. And link will be in the show notes. So can you believe we have already, a few weeks ago now, passed my 6 month explant anniversary? I was meant to record it just after Christmas. However, you know, life got busy, but really thankful to be able to share this episode with you all. Yeah, I can't believe I've made it to episode 19. The fact that I've done something for so long obviously means that I'm very passionate about it and, you know, bringing the awareness to this illness, and yeah, very thankful for everybody that is jumping in to listen. So we'll jump into today's episode. Here's my 6 month explant update and the experience of removing my Marina IUD. So today's episode is going to be in two parts. So what I'll cover first is just a bit of an update on what's happened leading up to my 6 month anniversary of my explant surgery. I am recording this a little later than I wanted to, but I wanted to cover as much of the topics as possible just to help as many people as possible. The second part of this episode is going to be talking about me removing my hormonal intrauterine device, or IUD, as I feel like that had been causing some of my problems that had been coming back around the 4 month mark. So first things first, I had a bra fitting sometime in November. It was actually the only time I have ever been fitted properly for a bra. So if you're in Australia, I went into a bras and things store and the lady was super helpful. They did my measurements. So they measure all around your chest. She came back and it was quite funny with a bra that was a double D cup. Now, I only ever was a C cup when I had breast implants. So I was like, oh, look, I don't think this is gonna fit, but I'll try it on. And she's like, yeah, just to get the idea of what size I might need to go down to. So I tried that on and it was one of those molded cup bras, and there was just so much room in it, especially up the top. So she went back and forward a couple of times with a few different kinds of bras and came back with it's like a balconette bra that's just lace, so there's no molding to it. And it was a C cup still. So I'm still the same bra size as I was before having my explant surgery, but I'm not as full at the top. So that's why I need to go for more of the balconette bras. So I bought a couple of them. They're like expensive, so I didn't go overboard and buy too many, but at least now I know what size I am and I'm finally able to wear a bra. I just wanted to wait a while just to see whether any fluffing happened to the breast tissue, therefore causing any size changes. So that's why I waited until November. So that was around the 5 month mark after having my breast implants taken out. Happily wearing those bras a lot of the time. I do still wear crop tops whenever I can. They're more comfortable and the shape of my boobs is evened out on both sides now. So yeah, they still look fine. Just wearing a really basic seam-free crop top as well. So very, very comfortable.
I did have my follow-up with my specialist in November as well. She's really happy with how I'm looking. She did ask how I'm feeling, and I said, look, I am feeling so much better than I did when I had implants. So she was really happy to hear that. So in one of my previous episodes where I gave a bit of an update on the fact that my implants had been recalled, I did get in contact with the company just to actually find out whether my specific ones were recalled. And part of that process was they sent me an email back asking for a whole heap of information, including the details of my specialist. So I gave them her details and I did ask her about that at the appointment. She did confirm with me that she did get back to them with all of the information that they had requested from her. And I asked her like why, it was almost like they went into a panic mode asking for all of this information when all I had asked of them was whether my implants were recalled. And she was like, look, it's just part of the process that they follow, just information collecting as well, just to see, I guess, in this situation where those implants were causing certain types of cancers for some women, they can collect the data to see what kind of percentage of the implants were causing that cancer. I did ask her whether there was anything else I needed to look out for, you know, is the risk completely gone now that the implants and the capsule are out, or is there still a risk down the track? And she did say, look, now that the implants were taken out, they were tested, everything came back negative for any kinds of cancers, that the risk is gone. However, I'm still going to keep an eye out just in case there are any changes, because it's still so new. And I just feel like, yeah, there's not enough information on this to really confirm that. So keeping an eye out for any funny symptoms, like any swelling of the breast tissue, any lumps in my armpits or any lumps in my breasts. That's all I could really find information-wise about these. So just keeping an eye out on that. So in that previous episode where I did talk about the breast implant recall, I did mention that I logged a report with the Therapeutic Goods Administration. I think I've actually been calling it association, and apologies if I've been getting the name of it wrong in previous episodes, but I logged that device incident report with the TGA here in Australia, and I did receive a response back from that complaint. So I'll read some of the relevant information out that came back in that one. So what I had put in my complaint was capsular contracture and inflammatory response to silicone breast implants. Breast implants were recalled in 2019 and I was not notified of the recall until researching recently in 2022. Allergan breast implants were inserted in July 2006 following tissue expanders. Slowly over the last 16 years and increasing in the last 5 years, I have experienced the following symptoms: hair loss, joint pain, poor recovery from exercise, body odor, brain fog and concentration issues, fatigue, temperature sensitivity, swollen glands in my neck, and sinus congestion, all of which have resolved since having the breast implants removed. I was also advised by my specialist that I had experienced capsular contracture. The capsules that formed around the breast implants were sent off for testing as there was calcification through them. Luckily, they came back negative for the breast implant associated anaplastic large cell lymphoma. So that was my complaint to the TGA in that device issue form. And I was kind of strategic about mentioning breast implant illness specifically as a name for my symptoms, just because I feel like at the moment there's still a bit of, oh, that's an internet fad kind of thing. That's why I mentioned in my complaint that I've had this response to them, which the symptoms have resolved since having the implants out, just in case they're collecting that kind of information themselves. So the response that came back within a couple of weeks of my complaint: capsular contracture is a known complication associated with breast implants. However, the TGA considers these reports seriously to determine whether the rate for this complication is rising. If you believe that you're experiencing ongoing problems and or notice swelling or pain in your breast, please consult your doctor. The TGA has information on its website about things to consider when having breast implants inserted or following the procedure, and they've provided a link which I'll include in the show notes. The aim of the Medical Device Incident Report Investigation Scheme, so IRIS, I'm calling it, is to improve the standard of medical devices and to reduce the number of severity of incidents with devices in Australia through voluntary cooperation between medical device users, industry and government. Thank you for submitting your adverse event report, contributing to the ongoing work of the IRIS scheme. They then go on to say assistance and information regarding product refunds, returns, or product compensation should be addressed with the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission or the ACCC via their website. Again, I will pop that and the phone number that they've provided in the show notes. And they do go on to say if you want to lodge a complaint about a clinical practice, you can go to the Australian Health Practitioner Regulation Agency or APRA. So I guess the next step for me when it comes to that, I might log some information with the ACCC, just because like my aim with this podcast and with anything that I'm sharing is just to raise the awareness, and considering the fact that it's not at the moment something that is actually diagnosable, you know, there's so many people that are probably going about their lives with this poor quality of life because of their implants if they haven't come across this information about BII. So first of all, I want to raise the awareness so that people are made aware of the fact that BII exists. But then also, there needs to be a conversation that's had with patients before going through this procedure about these risks. So there are women out there that seem to go along having breast implants and they don't have any issues after having them for years. But then there's a lot, like you see in the number of people that are in those Facebook groups, there are a lot of women that are experiencing these issues. So, you know, if I could do something to slow down that rate of people getting breast implants, then my job here is done. So that is why I will log that complaint with the ACCC. That's why I've logged this issue with the TGA. And that's why I've made sure that I've kept in contact with the Australian Breast Device Registry, just to make sure that they're aware of the symptoms that I have been experiencing, the fact that they've resolved post-explant. And even with the Australian Breast Device Registry, I've made sure that they were aware that I had recalled implants and that kind of thing, just so that there's as much information out there as possible for any of these organisations to collect and, yeah, make more people aware of this situation, because it's just, I'm just hearing so many stories of people who just feel like giving up because they've got all these mystery symptoms, their quality of life is really poor, and they're doing everything that they can within their control and that they are aware of to improve their quality of life, and it's not working, and it may come down to the fact that it's their breast implants. So I'm going to be a bit of a Karen about this situation and just keep complaining to whoever needs to hear it, because yeah, it just makes me really sad when I hear about how much a lot of people suffer with this.
One strange thing I have been noticing in the last couple of months, I'd say, but it's just slowly been getting worse to the point where I now actually can't wear my watch. But I've had a Garmin fitness watch for 2 or 3 years now, I think, and it has a silicon, here comes my dog again, it has a has a silicon watch band, and I cannot wear it. I actually start to get a rash under that band. I normally wear my watch on my left hand side, tried swapping it to my right, and that was great for a while, but now I can't even wear it on my right hand side. So I have done everything just to make sure, you know, that the watch band's clean and it's not something weird underneath it that's causing this rash to happen, and that's all been cleaned and there's no issues there. So my body's obviously just not liking silicone after having it in there for so long and having it taken out. So yeah, I have ordered a new watch band online that's not silicone, and going to see whether it's that whether it's wearing a watch or whether it's what it was made of that was causing the problem. Now, one thing I have spoken about in my previous episodes is whenever I have any kind of anesthetic, exactly 6 months afterwards, I start to lose a bit of hair, and that has kicked in at around the 6 month mark. So it's not quite to the extent that it was before I had my implants removed, but I am noticing a bit more hair falling out. But at least now I know that it's only a temporary thing. I'll have to monitor how long it actually takes before it slows down again. But it's absolutely something that my body just does exactly 6 months after surgery, and I am in that right now.
Another thing to update, I've recently recorded an episode with another podcast. They're based in Canada, so it was another situation where we had to organize the time difference, but I'm getting a lot better at that. And yeah, so the podcast that I'm on, they're called Be Real Babe, and they talk about all sorts of things. They talk about, you know, mental health, they talk about contraception and how that impacts people. and they do actually have some stories on breast implant illness. So if you are interested in listening to all sorts of topics from some Canadian babes, jump on and give them a follow, listen to their podcast, subscribe, all the fun things that you do when you enjoy a podcast. I really enjoyed recording with Brandy. She's an absolute natural at recording podcasts and interviewing people. And yeah, it was a 2-hour episode. I've never done an episode that long, and I've never really had something that's kept my concentration for that long. But yeah, really enjoyed it. So highly recommend jumping on. That kind of summarizes my whole story in one episode as well. So yeah, kind of from start to finish, how I'm feeling now, all sorts of situations. And I do provide the update on my hormonal IUD. So one thing I've noticed recently, and this is since the change in my contraception, I'm swelling up a lot when my clothing is too tight. I do still have a bit of fluid retention around my ankles, and nothing I seem to do gets rid of that. So in the past, when I've retained a bit of fluid, I'll make sure that I have like oats for breakfast, drink lots of water, and for some reason that seems to clear out a lot of the fluid retention in my ankles. They're not normal, but they are still right at the bottom, just before my foot. There's a on the inside of my ankles is retaining a lot of fluid. But then also recently, my partner and I went for one of our night walks, so we're doing those as often as we can throughout the week, and I was wearing more of a tight, it was almost like a compression crop top, and it was one that I bought pre-explant, so it's used to having more fill it up, but I've also put on that little bit of weight, which was unexplained. But it was so tight that by the time I finished my walk, my arms and my fingers were really swollen, like a lot of fluid retention had occurred throughout that walk. So being mindful of that, I'm going to talk to my doctor about it next time I speak to her, and making sure that when I do any kind of movement that I am wearing loose fitting clothing, nothing too tight, nothing uncomfortable. So yeah, interesting update there. And just another thing, like you've possibly listened to the episodes that I've recorded recently with Cara and with Heidi, but they talk very openly about the fact that they were almost, like I said before, like giving up on life. You know, they were trying to find the answers. They were sick of feeling unwell all of the time and not knowing what was happening. And especially in Heidi's situation, she was planning her own funeral and she hadn't even told her daughter about it because she just kind of wanted to slowly fade out. And that upset me quite a bit. You might, if you've listened to the episode, you hear me get a little bit emotional when she's telling me about it. But I kind of realized that I was bowing out of, not life in general, but I bowed out of things like CrossFit, and I've mentioned I had to stop CrossFit because I was never recovering from my workouts. And I just wanted to do that quietly because I don't like getting in the way. So, and like when I was going through all these things, like not recovering from my workouts, being in the middle of a workout and feeling like my quad muscle was going to split in half if I squat down too far, I didn't want to be, I felt like I was a hypochondriac almost. So I had a really amazing CrossFit coach who, when I was suffering from those issues, she would try and bring in things that would like help me to continue doing the workout. It may have been in a different way, but she was amazing with never judging me, always taking a moment to think, okay, what can you do instead? Here's this exercise, off you go, see how you feel. And I hadn't even contacted her when I cancelled my membership. I put my membership on hold for a few months just to see if anything changed, and it didn't. Then with that particular gym, you do have to give a month's notice. So I gave that month's notice, and I had planned on going back so that I could say goodbye, and the fact that I was sort of changing it up and doing workouts from home in my new home gym. But I didn't end up going back. So I felt like after speaking to Heidi and Cara that like I had been doing the same as them, like just didn't want to get in the way, just kind of wanted to fade out and do my own thing and work around what my issues were without getting too much attention for it. So what I did do recently is reach out to that favorite CrossFit coach of mine just to thank her for all of the time that she spent trying to help work with me on being able to do things. But I also let her know that I had been experiencing all of these problems, and then I had found out what the issue was and had surgery for it, and I'm on the road to recovery at the moment. I didn't tell her exactly what it was. I still haven't announced to, you know, my friends and extended family that I'd had this surgery and that I have this podcast. It's still a bit of a secret, I guess. But she was very thankful for me getting in contact and sort of said, anytime you want to come back, you know, you're welcome to come back here. So that was like something that I felt like I needed to do now that that sort of implants part of my life is over and the issues that they were causing, that was like a step forward. Another thing I did on a similar topic, you may have heard in my early episodes how I found out about breast implant illness. So it was just someone who was on Facebook who had a lot of mutual friends, had a look at her profile for some reason, was just drawn to it. And she had shared an article that she had written about having her breast implants taken out. So what I did, I found her on Facebook, kind of creepy, but that's, you know, that's life these days and having a presence online. And I sent her a message just saying, hey, hope you don't mind me reaching out randomly, but I came across your article years ago and it's completely changed my life. I've had my implants removed. I've had a whole heap of symptoms resolve and I'm feeling so much better now. And I just want to thank you for that. So she did get back in contact to say, you know, that's why I did that article. Thank you so much for reaching out. So that was really nice to do. Now, on to the big update for me. So on Friday, the 25th of November, I had my Mirena hormonal intrauterine device, or IUD, taken out. I had had it for almost 2 years. And going back, I guess, a bit of a storyline on birth control for me, I started taking the contraceptive pill when I was 16. And until the Mirena, I was on and off the pill throughout different phases of my life. I've tried different types of the contraceptive pill as well. So I think initially I was on maybe Levlen, which is like your basic pill, apparently, according to my first gynecologist. And then I have tried different ones in the meantime. So there was a period of time where I was on Trifeme, and that's like got multiple phases of hormones in it. And that really did not suit me, that one. I was super moody in the lead up to my period. I just had no tolerance for having people around me. I catastrophized situations in my head. So I would make up these horrible scenarios in my head that were so, so unlikely to happen. And it was just a really horrible few months that I was on it. And then there was this moment of, oh, I think it might be this pill. That's the only thing that's changed since my brain has started working this way. So I then changed it, I think it was around this time, to Yasmin. That was another one that didn't suit me. That one's a little bit more expensive than other contraceptive pills, I had noticed as well. Not that that was a problem, but the one thing that I did notice with it is 5:30 a.m. every day. And this was before I was getting up that early to go to the gym and that kind of thing. I felt sick, like I felt like I was going to throw up. So I only trialed that one for a couple of months and then probably had a break after that. Since then, I've sort of been on and off Levlen, and I've given some information before in previous episodes on ovarian cysts that I've had, and they were ones that had to be removed. But there were these times when I was off the pill and I had similar pain to what I'd had when there were ovarian cysts inside me happening. And so I went off for scans, and I believe it was twice that it occurred where I had what they call a simple cyst. So it is a cyst that, not necessarily one that has to be removed, but if it doesn't resolve on its own, then you can have it removed or drained. I think they can go in via keyhole surgery to fix that. But the answer to that at the time, my specialist put me on the pill again to resolve it, and it did work. When I went off the pill, had another simple cyst, had to go on it again, but then stopped taking the pill a few years back. And then when I was looking at going back on it again, I was with a new GP, and this is a GP that I still see now. They're very thorough there. They're very aware. They went through some questions about, you know, my health to see whether I was suited to the pill. That had actually never happened before. No other GP, no specialist had asked me. So one of the questions was whether I get migraines, and I used to get maybe one or two migraines a year, and they were the ocular migraine type. And they only ever started since I had my breast implants. The first time I had one, I was working at a gym. I was working on reception and there was this massive window letting a lot of daylight in. And normally that wasn't a problem, but on this particular day when my first migraine started, I was looking at our members as I was scanning their cards when they came through, and I could, like, it was like their face was this white orb and I could see a little bit of detail around their mouth and their eyes, but I couldn't really see anything else. And it was just really overwhelming to look anywhere. And I called my mom. I was really worried. I was probably 22 when this happened. And I'm like, "Mom, I think I'm having a stroke." And she asked me, my mom is a carer. She's done quite a few courses. She's also somebody that does a lot of research and Googles a lot of things just to learn stuff. And she's like, "I don't think it's a stroke. I actually think you've got a migraine." It was my first migraine ever. So at the time, my mum and my sister drove one car to pick me up. One of them drove me home and the other one drove my car home just so it wasn't dangerous for me to drive home. So yeah, since then I've only ever had a handful of them. And like I said, it was once or twice a year. But in this question set that my GP was asking, where she was looking at maybe giving me a prescription for the pill, she's like, "Look, because you get those migraines, you are at a higher stroke risk, so I can't prescribe you the pill." I'm like, okay. So she talked me through my options, and again, very thorough, talked to me about the injection that you can get. She talked to me about the implanon, that metal rod that goes in your arm, just a thought of like something sitting under my skin that's not meant to be there just makes me sick. And then she talked about different intrauterine devices or IUDs. So she talked about the hormonal one and then the copper one. Out of all of those, it seemed like the Mirena hormonal IUD was my best option. I've had endometriosis in the past, and the Mirena is prescribed to people who've had endometriosis to lessen their risk of it. It also reduces your period. It doesn't have the stroke risk that the contraceptive pill has. So I've looked up, and I'll provide this link in the show notes as well. I'm on the Mayo Clinic website, just where it talks about the Mirena. So the Mirena is a hormonal intrauterine device, or IUD, that can provide long-term birth control or contraception. The device is a T-shaped plastic frame that's inserted into the uterus, where it releases a type of hormone, progestin. The Mirena prevents pregnancy for up to 7 years after insertion. It's one of several hormonal IUDs with the FDA approval. So it offers long-term effective contraception. It can be used in premenopausal women of all ages, including teenagers. Now, they do talk about some risks to the Mirena, and the common things are where it can move or it can partially come out. And I wasn't really worried about that particular risk. But one thing my doctor didn't let me know, and I'm surprised about this, was actually someone else who was having the Mirena IUD put in because I had recommended it. They had read the sheet that comes with it, and the sheet actually talks about the risk of ovarian cysts occurring. And I'm really surprised that I was even prescribed it, considering the amount of ovarian cysts I've had and the fact that there were multiple different types of them. So there were the simple cysts, there were the dermoid cysts, and then that really big one that I can't remember what kind it was. But yeah, I was just like, why would this be something that my doctor would think is okay for me, considering there is a risk of those cysts? Anyway, in my previous updates, I had mentioned that I noticed some of my joint pain coming back, and it was particularly around my hips and my lower back. It wasn't as bad as it was before I had the implants out, but it was enough for me to notice it. So as I do, I got a little bit fixated on the topic and started looking at different videos, podcast episodes, Facebook groups about any issues that people have with the hormonal IUD. And there were a few people that did talk about the similar kind of joint pain. Another thing that I had been noticing is when I swallowed, I had a bit of a feeling in my throat like there was something stuck in it. And I do actually hear women talking about that as a symptom for breast implant illness. And it seems to me like maybe that is something linked with the thyroid. And you may remember I've mentioned that I've noticed that I have been putting weight on, even though I'm exercising a lot and I'm pretty okay with my food. Not perfect, but it just seems weird that I'm putting weight on. I've had my blood tested. I've had my thyroid levels tested, and the GP said that I'm within the range, even though I'm sitting quite high within that range. So to keep an eye on those levels, maybe get a blood test once a year. When it came to booking the appointment in, I actually let my doctor surgery know that was the reason for my appointment. I just thought that there would be extra things that the doctor would need to prepare. If this is something that you end up ever doing, just make sure you let your GP know. The morning of the appointment, I was in the shower and I think I was just experiencing some pelvic pain. And I kind of felt around at the front of my pelvis and there, it felt like there was a lump there. It was quite painful to touch. It was very swollen as well. Another thing that I had noticed in the lead up to this was that my nails were really brittle. So in the episode where I talk about different things I've tried to resolve my breast implant illness symptoms before I realized it was BII, was that when I was taking certain hair supplements to slow down my hair growth, it didn't help with the hair growth, but my nails grew really quickly. And I thought that maybe considering I'm taking all of these supplements and my body's obviously in a better condition now than it was with implants, that my nails would grow, but they were splitting like quite easily. So that was strange, but it was definitely something I noticed. Another thing that had been happening as well, I had around the 4 month mark post explant, it's almost like there was a shift in the way that my body interacted with the marina. So there were these moments where I would have this horrible excruciating pain that would almost knock me over. Like, I've got a pretty high pain tolerance considering everything I've been through, but it actually felt like there was something clawing on the inside of my uterus. And I had been spotting quite a lot. So while I've had the marina, I haven't actually had a period as such, which is quite common, but I instead would have about 8 days in a row of spotting. But the spotting just never stopped. I'd have it for about 2 weeks at a time. It'd stop and then it would start again. And one of the things that I had asked my doctor for was a blood test to see whether my hormone levels were out of whack. A friend of the podcast did get in contact with me after me talking about the weight gain and how I was feeling, saying, hey, have you had your hormones checked? So I did ask for that referral, but I actually needed to have the blood test done right at the end of a period. And considering the fact that I was spotting all of the time, I didn't know when the end of my period was anymore. So I haven't had that particular blood test done, but it's something that I will be able to have now. So on the day, the GP was really great. She's a big communicator, so she talked me through the whole process. The fact that it would be a little painful as it came out and there will be some mild cramping afterwards. She did also say that the moment that the marina comes out, it is not impacting you at all, so other contraceptive measures will need to be taken. So I'll go through the actual process just in case it helps anyone with preparing for this kind of situation. So similar to a pap smear, they put the duckbill thing in. It's like a speculum, I think it's called. And she got some medical tongs, grasped the strings and told me to cough as she pulled it out. And exactly as she had mentioned, there was a bit of pain like a bad period cramp. And then as I was getting dressed, there was another bit of cramping again and I was fine. I had also prepared for the fact that there would be a lot of bleeding as well, but that didn't actually kick in until a bit later in the day I started spotting. As I was walking to my car after this appointment, I realized this like straight away how much relief there was in the pressure that had been building up in my pelvis over I don't know how long. So immediately, 10 out of 10 was a good option, a good choice for me. A bit later on that morning, I was driving to my sister's house. So I had let her know, look, I had the day off work booked already, that I was free and happy to go and hang out with her and my niece and nephew. And she is always very supportive and cautious whenever I go through any kind of procedure that it may be painful. So she was like, keep me posted. If you're not feeling up to coming around, just call me whenever you sort of realize that you're not going to come around. I gave her a call and I'm like, look, I'm actually feeling really great. Do you want me to still come over? So I went and hung out with my sister and my niece and nephew for the day. And when I'm driving there, I actually need to go around this big roundabout. As I was going around this roundabout, I braced for pain. And I didn't actually realize I was doing it. I was subconsciously bracing for this pain and it never actually happened. So that was another thing that I realized. Like, there was obviously some pain there for a while that, you know, my body just didn't want it in there. I don't know whether there was some inflammation or anything, but yeah, there was no pain. Another thing that I probably should have mentioned before is when I was experiencing this pain, I did ask for a scan. And normally I'll just go to your normal radiology place for a scan, but considering I've had endometriosis before, I asked for a referral to this specialist imaging place here in Adelaide, and they do have nurses there who are trained on looking for nodes of endometriosis. Nothing came back obscure in that scan, and they did confirm with me that my marina was sitting in place. There were no issues with where it was. It looked perfect where it was sitting. And they had said to me, oh, look, it does look like you've ovulated recently. Maybe that pain that you were experiencing was ovulating pain. Now, that pain felt like somebody was stabbing me in the pelvis. That's just not normal for anyone to experience. So if you are experiencing anything like this, please talk to your GP. Like, please look at your options of whether you need to go for scans or see a specialist. You know, it's very, very important that you keep on top of any of this pain. Don't be shy, and don't be quiet about your situation is my only advice. So yeah, going back to the fact that I was bracing for this pain, I was obviously bracing for pain that had been there for a while, but the marina was in the right spot, so it wasn't even that it had moved causing the pain. So I spent the day with my niece and nephew, so they're like almost 2 and 1's 4, so up and down off the floor. And I noticed by the end of that afternoon that joint pain was completely gone. I went for a walk at the beach with my partner a bit later on than that, and I felt really amazing. So it just seemed like the relief that my whole body had felt from having the marina taken out was so instant. One thing that I did notice, I wasn't drinking any extra water that day, but I had to go to the toilet to pee a lot. Sorry if it's too much information for some, but it almost seemed like there was inflammation. Oh, there was fluid retention in my body, and that was leaving through having to go to the toilet a lot. So that all happened on the Friday. The next day was a Saturday, and I was in this horrible mood. I'd get frustrated with things, specifically if they were too close to me. So I drive an SUV, and it's not small on the inside, but I'd be inside the car, I'm like, everything's too close, and I'd get really ragey about it. When I'm in a bad mood, I get so mad at the most stupid things. So coat hangers just make me irrationally angry. If my handbag handle gets stuck on things, like my handbrake or that kind of thing, it was a similar kind of mood to that. But that kind of mood with me is very internal. And I asked my partner the next day whether he noticed the mood. He's like, I had no idea you were in a bad mood. Like, why didn't you tell me? Like, did I do anything wrong kind of thing? I'm like, nope, it wasn't you. Everything was fine. The car was just too small for me on that day. It just baffles me how my moods work. Anyway, but the Saturday morning, I had a lot of energy. So I did a normal upper body weights workout in the home gym, and I still had energy at the end of that. So I did my first CrossFit style workout. The first one since my explant after that big upper body weight session. Still, again, noticed less joint pain. I had some mild cramping later on that night, but it settled down just with a weight bag, and I was spotting at this point. On Sunday, so the next day again, I sat down on the couch and I realized that this had been painful before. So again, I braced my whole body as I slumped down on the couch waiting for this pain, and again, it was subconscious, but there was no pain. Like, and I turned around to my partner and I said, hey, I've just done this. There's no pain again. And we were both like, wow, this is huge. Like, this is such a positive change. So when it comes to the spotting, I spotted for about a week afterwards. And then it was almost like exactly a week after the marina was out, I had my first period, but I wasn't sure because I haven't had one in 2 years while I had the marina in. But it was really easy to handle. Like, it was just not even a thing. One other thing that I realized was in the mornings when I need to go to the bathroom, I would get this horrible pain when I had the marina, and that is no longer happening. It's almost like it's a surprise that I need to go to the bathroom now. Like, as with before, I'd feel this pain, I'd give it a couple of minutes, and I'd know I'd need to go just after that. So more positive steps. A couple of weeks after having the marina out, I noticed that weird sensation in my throat had also gone as well. So that weird feeling like something's stuck in there. So the hip pain is completely gone now. We're walking around 3.4 kilometers most nights of the week whenever we don't have something else on after dinner. that's definitely something I wouldn't have been able to do before explanting. But then again, with that around that 4 month mark when the hip pain came in, I wouldn't have been able to do it again then. But yeah, we're going on these walks, no problems. There's the occasional mild calf cramping that I get, but I have this magnesium oil spray that I've just bought online, and that if I spray that on my calves before I go for a walk, I don't have the cramping, so I just make sure I do that before we go out for a walk. So because of these, the pelvic pain, the spotting, and there were all the blood tests that had come back, you know, were saying that there was nothing obscure, no issues with my iron levels, no issues with my thyroid, my GP had referred me back to my previous gynecologist just for a review, and that appointment has been made for the end of January. What I'm going to do is reschedule that one to a few months' time, because the pains that I was experiencing and the spotting are gone. And I don't want to cancel the appointment because there is a bit of a wait to see him at the moment, but to book it in for a couple of months just in case anything changes. So I know that there is a risk that I may develop endometriosis again, and there are different symptoms to that, but you know, heavy periods and horrible period pain are two of those symptoms. So I need to give myself a few months to have some normal cycles just to see whether that return, or no, it never was actually a problem before when I had endometriosis. So yeah, whether that becomes an issue for me. I've got my Garmin Fitwatch, and that does come with an app where you can track your cycle in that. So any kind of pain that I experience or weird symptoms to do with my cycle, I'm going to keep track of them so I can go to the specialist appointment in a few months' time, armed with as much information for him as possible. So yeah, really, really positive step. And you know, I had been talking about the fact that I was worried, but that some of these symptoms had come back. And obviously my body just did not want the marina in there.
One thing I should mention, I do talk about the fact that lately I have been gaining weight and I've been really struggling to lose it. Any kind of strategies that I've tried before where I've lost weight, and it's never going extreme. I will never do cutting out carbs or, you know, keto. I've done keto before, my goodness. I'll never do that again. But, you know, controlling the amount of calories I take in, and again, not to the 1200 calories kind of thing. I, you know, do something that is achievable and normally lose weight on that amount of calories. I look at things like macros as well, making sure I am getting enough protein, good fats in. And it's, nothing's working. And one thing that I should probably mention in the past, so I have done 2 rounds of egg harvesting, I guess we call it. So similar to IVF, but instead of freezing embryos, I just froze eggs. And when I went through that, I put on quite a bit of weight. It took ages for me to be able to start losing it again. It was definitely at least 6 months, but that's one thing I probably need to be a bit mindful of. You know, I've gone through a few changes where I've had the implants removed, and I have read recently that they can be endocrine blockers, so mess with your hormones that way. But I've also then gone from having a hormonal IUD for 2 years and then suddenly having that taken out and this rush of hormones. So yeah, it's obviously something that my body does. You know, some people are like, it's so black and white, calories in versus calories out, but absolutely things like hormones, medications, you know, all sorts of things can cause issues with weight. So just a little message to always be kind to people, that, you know, if somebody's overweight, it's not necessarily because they're lazy or because they live on fast food. It might be something else that's causing that to happen. And my goodness, I know how much it beats, like I beat myself up about it. And yeah, so just trying to be mindful of being kind to my body and let it sort itself out now that it's gone through all of these changes over the last few months. And hopefully once everything has leveled out, I will then hopefully be able to start losing some weight. But in the meantime, I'm continuing to eat healthy, I'm continuing to exercise and do what I would have done in the past to lose weight. And hopefully that just kicks in soon. So I guess from here, the next steps for me are to record the ACCC complaint that I mentioned before. Link will be in the bio for anybody else that wants to do this. I'll continue to track my symptoms. So anything around any weird BII type symptoms, anything around my hormonal changes after having the IUD taken out, anything around the pain that I was experiencing while I had the Mirena in as well, so that when I do potentially go to my actual gynecology appointment in March that it has been moved to now from January, I have as much information to give to him as possible. I'll keep monitoring my exercise and food intake and, you know, look at different things like different calories and different macro splits. Maybe that's a lot of science for me to even think about, but look at that and see whether any, like, changing that after trialing it for a few weeks, seeing if there's any difference, changing it again, so I can potentially go to my doctor in a few months' time saying, hey, I have tried all of this, my weight isn't changing, what else can you test me for? What else could be happening here? One thing that I'm not sure I'm there yet, but it is very likely that I will go through menopause quite young because of all of the surgeries that I've had. So the fact that I've had an ovary removed and I have harvested eggs, like, you know, extra eggs going out over a couple of months, there is a slight chance that I will go through menopause quite young, and perimenopause starts before that. I don't know enough about it to talk about it specifically, but a lot of women do experience weight gain when they are in perimenopause, and a lot of the time it is around their stomachs. So that's where I'm really noticing it at the moment. So I'll be talking to my doctor about whether that is something that I can get tested for. I have no idea. So we'll look into that. I will get the blood test done on that note on my hormone level. So obviously just need to wait till the end of my next period before I can do that. I have had one since the Mirena was taken out, but I just completely forgot about having the blood test done. So I'll be mindful of having that done. And I guess some exciting news. When I was younger, I actually did karate for a while. Mum put me into karate because I was getting bullied at school, but I'm not overly coordinated at a lot of things. So the two things that I have been good at are karate and Olympic weightlifting. So I've decided with the new year starting to trial karate again, see whether my body can handle it. So I'll be starting that soon. And the aim is to get up to my black belt. So I did get to, I think it was brown belt when I was in high school, but had to stop because of that 7.5 kilo ovarian cyst that I had taken out the year after I finished high school. So really excited to give that a go in the next few weeks and see how it all goes. Thanks again for listening, and I will be back very, very soon with some more episodes where I'll be sharing the stories of other women, other amazing women who've been through BII and all the awareness that they're bringing to this. Speak to you soon. This podcast shares my own experience and research. I'm not a medical or health professional. You can find me on Instagram at couldit_be_ii_podcast. Thank you to my incredibly talented partner, Jacob Tengdahl, for the intro and outro music. All recording, editing, and artwork is done by me. Thank you for listening.